Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour or two, we're going to talk about cars, and it can be your cars. We're not going to sell anything. What we're going to do is help you determine whether or not you need to fix something or not, whether or not you want to keep the car or not, whether or not the suggested repair was valid or not. And in a broad sense of the word, we can probably give you parameters for some of the pricing that you may need. We can handle gas or diesel. We can handle pretty much anything. And so one of the things that comes up every day in my life, and oh, by the way, 602-508-0960, it comes up is that no matter where you're at, and there's three different kinds of repair shops here in town, there's dealers, there's independents, and there's chains. So you're likely to do business with one of them. And I'm going to tell you right up front that one of them is not better than the other, but there's bad guys in all three of those categories. So it's not uncommon for somebody to tell you that you need to have this work done. And the self-defense mechanism on that is pull out your owner's manual and have them show you. What I see day in and day out in our industry of car repair is we're telling people they need to have, for instance, their transmission serviced. And the manual says it's 100,000-mile, you know, transmission service interval, and you have 30. And so that would be a good question. The second part of the self-defense for car expense Bible of Mark Salem is you ask them to write on the work order what you need. So you go up and you get the work order printed. And then you go back to the person and you say, would you sign your name and give me your phone number and write down what I need? And I can assure you that if what they told you was an effort to take your money and put it in their pocket, then they're going to probably say, give you some reason why they can't do that. So people that are doing it in a good way will always be happy to write down their name, sign their name and phone number, and tell you, you know, you need a timing belt. You haven't had one. Yeah, according to you, you haven't had one, and you're 30,000 miles past what the owner's manual says. That's easy. That's an easy thing to write down. But on the other hand, if you have a 60,000-mile timing belt and they're trying to sell you one now, and the owner's manual says that we replace it at 90 or 100, that might be of concern to you, or you might very well say, go ahead and do it early. So those are your call. David, thank you for holding. How can I help you today?
Hi, I've got a 2000 Jeep Wrangler, and it was overheating, and we found that there was a crack in the plastic at the top of the radiator.
Okay.
So I went ahead and replaced the radiator, replaced all the hoses, replaced the thermostat, blew out the lines for the heating coil. And my wife still says that when she pulls into the drive-thru to sit and wait and get her coffee, that the thing's going up above the 200 mark on the temperature, where it used to hover down around 100, 160. So I'm not sure what next component I should be looking at.
Yeah.
Or if there's something else.
No, I disagree that you're overheating. That thing is a computer operated vehicle, and it should run between half and three quarters on the gauge.
Okay.
And 200 is of no concern of mine at all. Let me explain. In the old days, our engines used to take shovels to dig the sludge, the black sludge out of oil pans. And we didn't know what that was, and everybody blamed it on Pennsylvania oil, and they blamed it on a bunch of stuff. But nobody knew what it was. And we had 180-degree thermostats, and it wasn't uncommon for that car to run between 160 and 190. That's it. Now, David, I want to ask you a scientific question, and if you have to ask your wife for help, you get one free. When does water boil?
Well, it boils over 200 degrees.
210. 212? 212. 212.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what happens. Water boils at 212. It turns from a liquid to a vapor. By the time we add 50-50 coolant to it, and we put it under 10 to 12 pounds of pressure, we move that boiling point up to 260. So it's still a liquid up till 260.
Okay.
We also understand that every time you shut your car off, we create a tablespoon of water, or somewhere around a tablespoon of water, and it's because of the air inside the engine, as it cools, it condenses to moisture and vapor, and the water falls into your engine. Well,
if we raise the thermostat to 195 and we start running these cars at 220, that water's going to turn to steam in the morning within about 5 miles, and the PCV valve's going to suck it out of the motor and send it out the tailpipe. So we don't have sludge today. We don't have sludge in any car unless it's driven by somebody who's taken the thermostat out or driven by somebody who has the thermostat stuck wide open, and you'd know that in the winter because the heater wouldn't work worth the darn. So
right.
I think you did a good job, and 200 is of no concern of mine at all. I'm going to tell you that your car needs to run around 220. And then, of course, if she sits in the drive-thru for a coffee, it's going to go up 10 degrees, and that's no concern either because there's no airflow across the radiator because she's sitting still. But if she drives away and she reports to you, David, I don't even go a block and the needle comes right back down to where it was, that shows the cooling system is working perfectly.
Okay.
So
well, my concern was adding possibly an electric fan on the front of it because I look at the Jeep websites and a lot of people have done that, but that's more for their off-road applications.
Well, here's what we find out. Alan, you chime in if you want. We find that people put all kinds of electric devices all over the radiator for reasons that they can't fix the problem. And in reality, the radiator's plugged up, the water pump impellers are gone, there's always a cause why the car won't work as it's designed. So if a car comes in and it's got, you know, three fans on the outside of the radiator in a triangle and he's complaining of an overheat, then we're going to find a blown head gasket. We're going to find a radiator that's plugged solid. We're going to find a water pump. We had a Chrysler not too long ago where the water pump was sticking on the shaft.
Yeah.
And they wanted to do all kinds of stuff. Well, Mark, I want you to do this. I want you to do this. The internet said this. So here's what we did. David, we took the upper hose off the car. All right? Now, water flows out the upper hose. We also took the thermostat out real quick. So we aimed the hose straight forward, and we're kind of outside the shop. We're not in the shop. So, David, this car's cold. It's been sitting overnight. Now, if we start it up, and I take the thermostat out, otherwise the thermostat would close the output of water out of the upper radiator hose. I start it up. I should be able to rev it, and I'm going to tell you right now, the water in the cooling system will shoot 20 feet. So I start it up, whoppa, real hard throttle, and it's going to shoot water out. This car didn't dribble water out. We couldn't get it to move the water. So we took the water pump off and the impeller's spinning on the shaft. So the shaft is spinning because it's belt-driven, but it's not spinning the impeller. Therefore, it's not pumping water throughout the engine, and there's the problem. But he bought three brand-new fans. So put a water pump on it. We're done. So that's kind of the way it is. I would strongly suggest that you reconsider putting anything on there, and here's why. It's important to know that when you stop, we don't have nearly the airflow that you do at 20 or 30 miles an hour across the radiator. It's just that's the way it is. So it's designed that way, and it's perfectly fine that way. Here's where you got to stop. When the needle hits the red, you got to stop. Not in a minute. Not at the next exit. Not drive another 3 miles home. The needle's in the red. You got to stop. The other part is as it gets close to the red, you're okay. Because the red's at 260, and the motor starts to melt down at about 265 to 280. So that's what you're looking at, but you're a long way away from that. Okay?
That's kind of what I thought, because in the last two weekends, we took the Jeep up to Sedona and went up Snively Hill, and I'm climbing that thing at, you know, in first or second gear, revving the engine high, and we're crawling along at less than 20 miles an hour, and the thing was, it ran great. So, but then she points out, well, it overheats when I'm sitting there waiting for my coffee. I'm like, well, don't wait for your coffee.
Shut it off and go inside.
Yeah, you're saying that, David, not us, okay? We're not suggesting that you use that terminology because divorce lawyers are pretty cheap, buddy. So anyway, David, thank you for calling. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960.
Richard is your next caller, Richard.
602-508-0960. Richard, how are you, buddy? What can we do for you?
I've got a 2016 Kia Sorento with the V6. The linkage on the fuel has always seemed a little stiff. It's a new car. But anyway, yesterday I was trying to get in the HOV lane, and I was going 50. The one's coming up, so I hit the throttle all the way down, and it just nosed down. I let back up, and then it picked up.
How many miles are on it?
50,000.
I think if... does it ever work right? Does it ever work right, or is it always fall on its face when you throttle it up?
Only when you one time going up on ramp, I went all the way down and it did the same thing. You back off a little bit and then it catches.
Okay. Well, I'm going to guess that it's one of two things. I want you to try various positions of the fuel tank. So I want you to go down to a quarter and see what happens, and then I want you to go to full and see what happens. I'm looking for a problem with the fuel pump that's inside the tank that's cooled and lubricated by the gas. Okay? So if we drop you down to a quarter, we're going to expose a little bit of that fuel pump to the atmosphere. And if you said, oh, Mark, it gets a lot worse, and then I fill it up and it gets a lot better, then we got a fuel pump problem. But at 50,000 miles, I'm not thinking that's real likely. The second thing is do you wash your engine at the self-serve car wash?
No, I do not wash my engine.
Okay. The throttle position sensor, called the TPS, is supposed to tell the computer where your throttle's at. We find people that wash their cars at the car wash oftentimes wipe out that sensor, and then they fall on their face on half to three-quarter throttle. Because this little tang that runs along these piano keys back and forth has to tell the computer to the tenth of a volt where you're at. So if the TPS is bad and it falls on its face. So those are the two most common problems, TPS or a fuel pump.
Well, I noticed yesterday when I was making a left turn, I was going about 10 miles an hour, when I pushed down on the throttle, it just hesitated momentarily, and then it took off.
Okay, and that's kind of what we're looking for. You'll save yourself some diagnostic money if you can demonstrate the problem both ways. Look how I hit it here, and at about 60% it falls on its face, but if I go past that, woo, it goes good. Now watch this. I stuff it to the floor as hard as I can, and it falls on its face. That's what we want customers to do. We want them to help us by giving us that kind of information. So you're going to save money if you just do that. Now, another easy way to do it, and of course, it's too expensive for you to go buy a fuel pressure gauge. And most shops aren't going to loan you their fuel pressure gauge. But for a shop, we're going to screw on a fuel pressure gauge, tape it to the outside of the windshield, and go drive it. And we need to see 30, 40, 50, whatever the spec is. We need to see some LBs, some pounds on that baby that holds steady. And when you throttle it up, it actually should go up in the PSI because the computer is going to shut the gate for the return line to the fuel pump.
Well, when I bought this, it was used car, as a rental car, and I went to Kia, and they said, well, I've got a limited warranty. It gets 60,000. Should I go there first and see if they'll look at it?
Well, here's the best news. This is going to be the best advice you get today. You need to take it in for that. You need to take it in for that. And make sure that they write down on the work order exactly what you said.
Right.
Because that stops that warranty clock. So if the problem doesn't come back until 61,000, you have a record of that problem during the warranty period.
Oh, okay. Well, great, Mark.
And that's very valuable. And you know what? If you take it back twice, it's even better.
Well, now, is it common? This throttle just seems to be, it's not smooth. Is that just a characteristic of that?
No, you're the first person in a very, very long time that complained about the throttle being sticky, extra hard, or sticky, 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 and it moves in jerk, jerk, jerks. That could easily be the problem. Now, I don't know if you have a throttle by wire, but a throttle by wire is you have two sensors on the throttle pedal. We are not connected from the throttle pedal to the engine. So we have two sensors on the throttle pedal, and we have two sensors on the engine, and they have to talk to one another. So when you throttle up, one sensor tells the other that he's throttling up, that sensor tells another one, and then all of a sudden we add fuel, and it does it in the blink of an eye.
Okay.
So you don't actually have a direct mechanical or cable connection between the throttle pedal and the butterflies on the carburetor or the fuel injection mouth on your intake.
So, okay. Well,
all right.
Thank you much.
You bet, you Richard. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan and Andy, and they're both part of our organization. And they both know their fair share about cars. But let me tell you somebody who knows a lot about transmissions, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Automatic Transmission Exchange is a great shop. It's been in Phoenix since 1968. They're on 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. So if you drive Washington every day, either east or west, the idea is when you look at 40th Street in Washington, you'll see Automatic Transmission Exchange and realize it's been there a long, long time. They do everything. They do from repairs to leaks, through shift problems, through noises, vibrations, and all the way including complete overhauls, but they're pretty good at what they do. So if you live in the Phoenix area and you're looking for a good transmission shop, then I would suggest Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington. Let's go to the phones. Larry, good morning. How can we help you?
Mark, I've got a 97 Dodge Pleasure Way motorhome. It's a Class D van, one-ton 360 engine, and I've had it for 2 years and very few problems. Probably within the last 6 months, I have changed both the front and the house battery. Hadn't used it for about 3 weeks to a month or something like that, so I had it plugged in to electrical, went back out, and both batteries are completely dead.
Okay, so you think you have a short?
I've got something someplace, and by both batteries, of course, the both batteries are connected because one will assist the other if it's low.
Okay.
And now the Dodge has the switch on the headlight switch,
uh-huh,
so that you could turn your parking light, I mean your interior lights, completely off.
Yes.
Which I have done. Because that's one of the things that will drain a battery if you leave it in the on position, because those lights stay active as far as receiving voltage.
Okay. Well, unless the voltage is going through a filament, the circuit can be alive, but unless there's a filament there, there's not going to be a consumption of electricity.
Yeah.
This may not be anything that you're going to be able to fix because you don't really have the technology to do it. You could do this. You could charge up the batteries, and fully charged is about 13 volts. Now, let me ask you a question. You don't have any buttons that you push or switch to connect the house to the motor, house to the engine?
Yes, there's actually a disconnect switch.
Okay, I'm not looking for a disconnect switch. When you're driving down the road in that motor home, you should be using the main battery, the motor home battery. And
right.
So if the motorhome battery is dead, then you should be have a button that uses the house batteries to jump the engine battery. So it connects the two of them on a temporary basis. Do you have something like that?
No, on the previous motorhomes I've had, it had the auxiliary switch, which this one does not have it. The only thing it has is they had installed a disconnect switch on the actual battery, the main battery.
I understand.
So when you disconnect it, it disconnects everything in the back.
Okay, well, you're wrong about that unless it's wired that way. The house battery can be all by itself, and it's going to charge and run off the alternator, and it's going to run all the cabin stuff. But as far as the house batteries are concerned, they're going to be hooked up to the house batteries. And so you're not going to be able to switch that back and forth based on what you're describing. But nevertheless, here's what you do. You charge up the batteries until they're 13 volts. And you pull the negative off the house, and you pull the negative off of the engine. And you have your voltmeter with you. And so you're going to go out in the morning and the evening and check the voltage. And we want to make sure that they're 13 every time we check them. What we're doing is we're checking for a shorted battery. We're checking for a dead cell. We're checking for something that's going to deteriorate the voltage. Because they're not hooked to the engine or the cab or the house of your motorhome, they're not supposed to consume anything, and especially if you got the negative cables off. So we need to make sure the batteries are good first. Then you hook up one battery, and you start checking the voltage on that battery. We know the house batteries, you're going to do the main battery first. The house batteries, they're not going to do anything. So we're going to leave that disconnected. We're going to just test the main system. So you're going to check the battery voltage, and if it goes from 13 to 12.2 to 11.6, then you need to work underneath the hood of that thing. So you need to find what's the draw on the main battery, and the house batteries are really not involved. Now another thing you need to know, this is why I'm talking about technology. Whatever the static battery is with the key in your pocket, let's say it's 12.6. Then you want 1 volt over that when you start it up and pull the RPMs up to 1,500 RPM. So if you've got 12.6 on a battery with the key in your pocket and you start it up and hold the idle up to about 1,500 to 1,500, that thing should go from 12.6 to pretty close to 13.6. We're looking for 1 volt kick. But there's so many things on a motorhome that can cause it to... And so what we do is we use an inductive amp probe. And we just simply start at the negative side of the house batteries, and we follow the negative cable throughout. And pretty soon we're going to come to a switch panel, and then we take the panel off, and then we have all these breakers and stuff. And we just start looking for the draw. And then all of a sudden we say, oh, this light bar right here is where we got a 12-amp draw. Then you follow that light bar, and you find out that the compartments underneath the bed in the back, the light has been left on. So that's kind of how it works. But you're not going to have an inductive amp probe, and you're not going to have the necessary equipment to track it down. But the basics I told you, do that both with the house and the main battery. That will at least eliminate the batteries. And then when you continue to test it after you hook up the main first, and you test it and it holds power, then you hook up the house batteries and boom, 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 we drop. Now we know where the problem's at. So that's how it works. Where do you live? Where do you live in town?
I'm just off of 24th Street and Indian School.
Okay. 25th Street Auto at 25th Street and Indian School. One of the best guys I know is Billy, who runs 25th Street Auto, Indian School. I can promise you Billy can track down the problem wherever it's at.
25th Street?
Yeah, 25th Street Auto. And it's a 25th Street and Indian School, and it's called 25th Street Auto.
1 minute.
Wow. All righty. Okay. All right. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. All righty. Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire Service. Now, they opened in 1996, and they have three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. At S&S, they have a really good comprehensive line of tires and many different brands of the same size. They have tractors, motorhomes, and everything in between. They also do alignments and suspension work that go hand-in-hand with new tires. Now, what you can do at S&S is you can stop by, they'll take the tire size, and they'll give you a good, better, best price. So if you're going to turn it in because it's leased, you may not want to put the top-line tires on it, so you put the good ones on. Then maybe it's going to be a car that's going to be used a little, so you put good on there. So good, better, best, and then all of a sudden it's one thing that you're going to keep forever, then you can keep and put a good tire on it. S&S Tire, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, a good place to start your tire or suspension problem. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome. Mark Salem here, along with Andy and Alan, and we're here at your service, car repair time. If you have a question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And you guys start thinking about something that's happened this last week that's, was good or bad or, somebody that... I think the thing that bothers me the most is the YouTube, kind of conversation. Well, YouTube said to do this. That bothers me. That bothers me a lot.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. No, say it isn't so.
Yeah, no, it's true. It just bothers the heck out of me. And this is what I say to people. So let me get this straight. You're going to spend your hard-earned money on a guess given to you by somebody on the internet that you don't know. Now, it could very well be the local guy that hauls your trash. It could very well be a doctor who knows nothing about cars, or it could be somebody who heard that Uncle Fred said that a friend of his did this to fix their car. And I can tell people with all the honesty in the world that we've never fixed a car based on YouTube. And I'll tell you something else. I'm going to give you a confession. Here's the confession. I've been
working. You fixed something off of YouTube.
Yeah. No, but I did go to YouTube, and that's part of the story. I had this Poland blower up at the ranch, and I got it from the shop here. Nobody used it, so I took it up there, and I got the thing to start and run just perfectly. Then all of a sudden, it took like 40 pulls to start it. So I got on the internet and I bought a $20 carburetor, and that did nothing. So I put a new spark plug in it, and that did nothing. So I'm pulling on this thing for days. And I've got spark and I've got fuel and I can't figure it out. I'm feeding propane to it. I'm doing everything I could. So I get on the internet and I Google Poland and the model number. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of people that you can buy this and you can do this and this is what it is. And nothing. Nothing. There isn't a scintilla of truth in the whole YouTube.
Scintilla?
Yeah. That means that's
the definition of that.
Pretty sure it's just a word that got made up.
Nope,
look,
it's not.
Gil, could you look that up for us?
Yeah.
Scintilla.
Gil, have you ever heard a scintilla? Not a scintilla.
I think those are little armored animals that live in Texas.
Those are armadillos.
Oh.
Gilt.
Gotta look that up.
You look that up. Scintilla. But anyway, not a scintilla of information. So I'm pulling on this, and I recognize that I pull it, the carburetor's wobbling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the carburetor's supposed to be securely fastened to the motor, to the cylinder. So I'm pulling, and then I reach up and I grab the carburetor, and it's moving. And I look, and the bottom of the cylinder that bolts to the engine block, there's four bolts, and they're all loose.
So you're losing compression.
Yeah. And so I take the whole thing apart to where I can get the motor in my hand, and it's got this long, you know, skinny socket, this 8mm that you have to use. So I tighten down all four of them. And they're obviously, they're all loose. So I tighten them down really tight. I put it all back together. How many times do you think I pulled it before it started?
One.
Three. One. She, bingo, she's got it. So it starts and it runs absolutely perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. Not one person on the internet knew that the cylinder had come loose from the block. Not one person. Nobody knew that. So then I call Billy over at the place that we usually do, mm-hmm. and I said, have you ever seen this happen? He goes, oh, yeah, we see it all the
time.
2 minutes. I said, why don't you tell everybody on YouTube? He goes, why?
Because he'll lose business.
Well, he says, "What? Well, I'm no different than everybody else. His heart was in the right place. I'm no different than anybody else. So if you want to fix your car using YouTube, there's nothing wrong with that. But you're going to end up at a shop somewhere down the line because you spend a whole lot of money. And then the last thing we want to hear is you know, I've really spent like $400 chasing this problem. I hope you can fix it for really cheap.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite line. My favorite line.
I bought a carburetor and a fuel filter, spark plugs, wires. What's it going to cost? Well, how much do you have into it? I've got like $14,000 into it. They're like, I can't spend anymore. Well, is it fixed? No, but I need to bring it to you, but I can't spend anymore. I've already spent like $14,000. Well, it didn't fix it, did it?
Okay. That's what we think. We don't necessarily say that, but that's
well,
what
yeah,
we
yeah.
think.
Well, yeah, yeah. No. I'm thinking out loud.
Yeah. It is. It's that does happen a lot. I tell people it's important to talk symptoms. That's symptoms and show symptoms. Well, that's an important part.
And I think it's easier for us just because we've been in the business. We know this. This is our thing. But for all these people that don't know and they're just trying to get any piece of information that they can to remedy the problem they have, then they're just doing their homework.
I want to tell you something. I wanted to stab my eye and my ears with a fork the other morning. I'm at a breakfast dinner, and there's a guy at
breakfast
the end of the breakfast get-together of a bunch of old guys. And there's a guy sitting across from me, and he hones in on the car guy. And he says, I use so-and-so, and I'm not happy with them. And I said, I stopped recommending so-and-so 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just stuffed my mouth with food because I knew all hell was to break loose. Well, I bought this car from them, and I thought it had a towing package, and it doesn't. I said, well, just go get a hitch put on it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to haul? A boat. Well, how big of a boat? Well, I don't know.
A yacht.
Yeah, a yacht. I said, well, your Kia ain't going to haul a yacht, but it's going to haul something that fits on a single axle. Well, you know what happened? I took my car in. I had a nail through the sidewall. And they wouldn't warranty it. They charged me $293, and they said, that tire's not under warranty. But my car is, but my tire's not. I said, what do you think if you're running into a wall at 40 miles an hour, they're going to say, oh, we'll warranty that?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the deal here? Then he takes it in, and he has a smell. And he takes it in three times, and nobody can smell but him. I said, change your shorts. You know, what the heck? There's a problem here. And I had to listen to this guy. So Jeff is at the end of the table, and he texts me. And
he says,
do you want me to have you paged? I go, yes, please have me paged. So then you hear, Mark Salem to the lobby, please. Mark Salem. I got him left. God, it was miserable. The guy had one story after the other. And then they said this. I said, that's not true. Well, then they said this. They said they could get an aftermarket hitch. Yes, they can. But they couldn't put it on because it's against the law. No, they can't. That's a lie. You know, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
So finally, Mark Salem to the lobby, please.
This guy
gone.
Had one story after another?
I mean, just like me.
I don't know anybody like that.
I was giving you examples.
Okay.
All right. You guys can quit laughing because I've got to control your mics.
Okay.
602-508-0960 if you have a car question. We're here to help you. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's turn that off and turn this on, and we'll get going here. So, obviously, there's an issue here about the word scintilla. Now, yeah. Alan just walked out, and he had some. He's either going to the bathroom or he's got something. His wife probably called him. But, Gil, to save me the embarrassment of calling my kids out, would you describe scintilla for me?
Okay, I checked it up on the internet, and scintilla is a noun. And the definition is a tiny trace or spark of a specified quality.
Okay, so when I said not a scintilla of evidence, is that fit the definition?
Yes, that describes a quality that is a trace.
Can I hear a, I'm sorry. Alan said he thought he heard tortilla.
He must be hungry again.
Yeah, he's hungry again. Yeah, he heard tortilla or tortilla. Yeah, that's what it is. Or tortoise or something like that. It's a good thing he's gone.
He's so full of it.
He is. All right, Air Park Auto is in North Scottsdale. Why is Air Park Auto special to me? It's because Nadine owns and operates. Nadine and Stacy were friends of my wife and myself for years and years, and certainly for the last 20 years. Stacy passed away, and Nadine decided to stay with the business, and she's done a really good job. She's located on Raintree, just east of Hayden, just south of Frank Lloyd Wright. She's been there since the beginning. She knows right from wrong, and she's not likely to be swayed by a technician who's feeding her a line of bull excrement. So it's really important to know that you're going to be well taken care of with respect to Air Park Auto. So, again, they're on Raintree just east of Hayden, just south of Frank Lloyd Wright, kind of in the northeast corner of North Scottsdale. Good place. If you don't have a place to go, may I suggest you stop by for an oil change and get to know them, and I think you'll be happy. Air Park Auto Service, Raintree just east of Hayden. Don, good morning to you. How can we help you?
How you guys doing?
And we're good. Good.
Hey, guess what? The company bought me a new tow truck. So
no.
Oh yeah, no more spoke wheels.
Well, how long have you had your driver's license back?
Yeah.
I had to get you.
Oh, I know. Hey, I'm working on my S10 with a 4.3 without using a pry bar on putting a water pump on it.
Okay.
And I know you've got that little S10 that you use for parts. It's got 300,000 on it.
Yep.
How do I get the fan off? I mean, it's on the screw thing. It's reverse thread.
Okay. You know, usually we leave it's belt driven, yes?
Yes.
Okay, usually we leave the belt on it. Now, sometimes you have to have somebody, you know, push on the slack side of the belt, push the belt towards the center to hold it in order to get that off. I know that sometimes I've seen guys with big wrenches and a brass hammer, and one guy's pushing on the belt or doing his best to hold the fan hub, and the other guy smacks the wrench with a big brass hammer. But
brass hammer's out of the question, and I'm using a crescent wrench because I don't have anything that large.
Okay. And, yeah, it is reverse thread. Now, another thing you can do is take one of your wife's steak knives and use it as a chisel and just jar the threads around the nut. Just take a small hammer and just tap it. You're kind of breaking the threads loose. So, you know, it's a six-sided nut, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so just put a magic marker on one of them and just whack it. Not enough to cave it in, but you know what I'm saying. We're just breaking the threads loose. So just rotate it around and whack each side of that big castle nut.
I do that on my pickle jars.
Do you?
Yeah.
With a knife?
Yeah, with the handle part of the knife.
And it works perfect.
Yeah, and it pops them open. Or, I mean, it makes them loose so you can pop them open.
Loosens it up, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So try that. And if not,
An old wives' tale, right, Andy?
Yep.
Well,
yeah.
Don, and if that doesn't work and you just can't get it, go get your wife to help you.
my wife is over with the relatives making pierogies.
Ooh.
Pierogi?
Oh yeah, pierogies. Haven't you ever had pierogies?
No. Tell me what it is.
It's let's see.
You're going to eat it, but you don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, my mother-in-law used to make them by hand, and so my granddaughter wants to have a tradition of her letting her grandmother teach her how to make pierogies, which is it's a dough with, and you put potatoes in it, and other stuff. And you wrap it over and you boil it in water.
Kind of like a dumpling or like a pot sticker type thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think my mom used to make it like maybe with meat and rice inside of it.
That's more of the Lebanese style, but yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
well,
my wife's Polish, so.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm not taking that bait, Don. Not taking that bait. All righty. Hey, thank you very much for calling, Don. Good luck to you, buddy. Good luck.
Ken is your next caller.
Tammy, good morning to you. How can
Ken.
I help you?
Ken.
Oh, Ken. I'm sorry. Ken.
I could try a falsetto, but I've got an 06 Acura RL, and I had it in for a recall on the airbags, and they told me I've got a broken right front upper arm bushing and broken motor mount, and of course that's pretty pricey to get all that fixed. And I'm wondering what's a good shop to go to see that, because I'm hoping it's less than the dealer.
Okay, well, first of all, let's go back to step one. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go to symptoms. Any kind of a bad bushing on your upper or lower control arms, and you probably just have lowers on yours. There's going to be a thump on a hard takeoff or an abrupt stop. And I'm not talking about a hard takeoff where you go from 0 to 100. I'm just talking about you're at a traffic light, and you can put it in neutral if you want. And then when the light turns green, put it in drive or first gear, and take off kind of abruptly. Now, there should be a thump there because the bushing's bad, and now the arm's moving forward and backwards. So the arm, when you apply the brakes, the arm moves backwards, and when you accelerate hard, the arm moves forward because it's connected to the front wheels. So...
Yep.
You don't have any of those, or do you?
I honestly, my son drives a car, but you know what, though, Mark? I was driving that vehicle, getting some work done for him, and I took it over the dealership, and I did not notice any of that. Now, I don't accelerate quickly or, you know, jam on the brakes. I try and, you know, make my tires last, but I understand what you're saying, and I didn't notice anything, and I'm usually, you know, I don't have the stereo turned up high with the fan on the air conditioner blowing. But I will drive it and see if I hear any of that.
Okay, now, is it an automatic or standard?
It is an automatic, and it's an all-wheel drive.
Okay, fine. And the next thing, and you can...
The other thing I was going to say about the bushings is a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on that kind of stuff, too. You know, some people, they have slight surface cracks that, what year is this?
06.
You know, that in 11 years... are going to happen.
Yeah. Let me change the question to you, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
How many times of 100% of the times when people ask for a second bushing visual,
sure.
How many times do we agree that it's bad, and how many times do we tell them we don't agree that the surface cracking is a good sign to change the bushing?
Yeah, I'd say 8 out of 10 times we don't agree. We just say that there are surface cracks. The bushing hasn't broken all the way through or isn't completely disintegrated.
And no portion of it's missing.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
That's what you're kind of looking for. So, and another thing you can do, too, is you can literally have somebody in the car holding the brakes. And you get a couple of people, and they're on the front of the car, and they push. And now the car's locked up. It's not moving. So they push the car forward and let it come back. Push the car forward and let it come back. Or they push the car backwards and let it come back. Then somebody's standing there looking at two front wheels. If you...
Yep, I appreciate all the troubleshooting ideas. I will give those a shot, and it's good to know somebody on this end of town that does Acuras. Thank you very much. I really enjoy the show.
Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I want to tell you about another shop in town that I'm very, very proud of, and that's Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Larry Harker's Auto has been in business since 1967. They've been there a very long time. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Bob's in the shop, and Ellen's on the front counter. Ellen is a very sturdy cowgirl. She knows what she's talking about, and it's a bad idea to walk in there and pretend like that you're talking to somebody who was born yesterday. That's not Ellen. She's a very kind lady, but she knows lots about cars. But Bob is a million times better, and he could be better than I am. He's a diagnostician extraordinaire. You wave that red flag in front of him and you say, nobody can find and fix this. I was wondering if you were willing to give it a try, and what would the range of diagnostic money that you would charge me? he's really a wizard. And there are cars that he calls me and he'll say, this is the symptom. Do you have any ideas? And sometimes I say, Bob, I don't even have a clue. I just need more information. Well, this is what I found. This is the path I took. And this is what I replaced. And then, of course, hey, Bob, is the symptom gone? Yes, it is. Wow.
1 minute.
So he did a Dodge truck the other day, and it had a bus issue. And a bus issue is where a whole bunch of circuits come together. It's kind of like a train station where everything comes together. And he found it and fixed it. And I was really proud that the customer called me and said he did it. But if you've got one of those cars that nobody can fix, and it's got a bug that's sometimes there and sometimes not, then go and see Bob at Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in his school. Might not be a bad idea. We got open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to be here another hour, so even if you come in now, if I can't get you, I'll get you within the first 2 minutes. We'll be back about 2 minutes after the top of the hour, so I'll get you right then. So you might have about a 4 minute wait. 602-508-0960. We're going to be here till noon. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Andy Salem, my daughter. We both work at a repair shop, and I'm an ASE master technician and have been for more than 25 years. I'm at your service right here.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet. I climbed up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee. We've been in the auto repair business since 1979, and we're both just about 29 years old. So if you have a car-related question or a problem, then I just turned your mic on.
Okay.
And you can give us a call, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. It's a BBB AAA or A-plus shop, I should say, staffed by some of the very best diesel techs in the business. They're dedicated to providing the best service possible while getting the job done right the first time, and as well as diagnosing it right, then fixing it right. At Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, they're diehard diesel service, repair, and parts people. They do foreign and domestic like diesel trucks. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and they also sell parts online 24 hours a day. So if you want to shop for some diesel parts, then you can go to strictlydieselprobably.com and look at some of the stuff that they have. So a good place if you're in North Phoenix that's got a, and you got a diesel, if you're looking for a diesel shop, then Strictly Diesel would certainly be a good one. Jack, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I've got a 13 Suburban, 170,000 miles on it, the 5.3, and I've got two cylinders that are misfiring, showed several hundred misfires. One of them's number 6, and I forget which the other one is.
Okay. Well, the process that we use is pretty universally accepted. We're going to go ahead and look at those cylinders with an oscilloscope. We're going to do an emissions test. We're going to look for vacuum leaks in and around the cylinders that are coating on us. But most of the time, we're going to now, this has coil over ignition, so it has coil and it has a boot and a spark plug.
Right.
So we're going to transfer that entire assembly to a different cylinder. So if let's pretend that 6 is, you know, you've got a number 6 cylinder. So we're going to take 6, spark plug, boot, and coil, and move it to 4, and move 4 to 6. We're going to clear the code and go drive it. The question then becomes is, did the problem move or not? The other day, somebody came in with a code. They had put an $800 injector in their diesel, and they still had the code. And so this shop had said, it's just an injector. Let's put a code in, and they spent $800. We did a cylinder contribution test, and certainly the cylinder was dead. So we took the injector out, and we looked in with the camera, and it's got a hole the size of my thumb in the top of the piston.
Wow.
So the injector had nothing to do with the problem, and it was an $800 waste of time. In your particular case, here's what's kind of nifty. If you pull 4 and 6 coil, a boot, and spark plug out, you can look at the two spark plugs and compare the burn pattern, but you can also look at the boot. The boot, if it has any white spots with a black hole in the middle of it, spark has been jumping through that boot. So inspect the boots really good. Now, if you do have a boot that's got a white spot on it, where spark's been coming out, go ahead and move the coils anyway, because more than likely the problem will follow the coil and the boot. So from a home perspective, that's how I would handle it. Now, During this period of time, leave number one cylinder alone. Okay? The computer gets all of its information and it starts counting at number one cylinder. We don't want to mess with number one. So just leave. Don't switch 6-to-1 or 4-to-1 or anything like that. Just stay away from one. So you got plenty of room in there to move spark plugs around and coils around. Okay?
Right. Yep.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye. All right. I have a couple of things. I got a letter from Ron.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron didn't leave me any contact information.
Yeah.
I wish
you
would.
Anonymous.
Yeah, it was an anonymous. And basically what he said was is that he had had a tough time with one of my shops. And he wasn't happy about it at all. And the last thing I remember, and I unfortunately left it at the office. Mm-hmm. So the last sentence was the one that kind of, I wasn't mad at him, but it kind of hurt me. He says, you know, your shops aren't as great as you purport them to be.
Right.
Okay. So this is kind of a touchy situation. The shop he's talking about, we kicked off.
Just not that long ago.
Right.
And unfortunately, his issue had happened over a year ago, and he had stewed about it all this time, and he never said anything, and that would have maybe helped the second customer that, you know, I don't know.
He took his car in, and first of all, it's a mechanical shop that wanted to turn to paint and body. And that was a bad deal, and I learned a very important lesson. I'm never going to let that happen again.
Right.
Well, he took his car in, and I guess he had a fender. And they charged him 11 hours to paint the fender. Is that a fair representation of it?
I believe that's what it was.
And
yes.
He felt that they had ripped him off, and he didn't like the whole situation. And this was a year ago, and that was the first sentence. He says, I've been stewing about this for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he would have told me a year ago he was unhappy.
Right.
I wish he would have done that. That would have started the process. Now, in reality, the problem we kicked him off for was a paint and body issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing started 6 or 7 months ago.
Right.
And it didn't take us long to figure out we had a big problem. So the shop does a terrible job on a wreck that's paid for by the insurance company. It goes to another shop, and the second shop says that this car is just a miserable failure and a bunch of things. It goes in front, and the customer offers to settle to one of our shops, and he declines.
Mm-hmm.
So the customer files a nice complaint at the Better Business Bureau, exactly like our rules say. The customer goes to the auto, that complaint goes to the Auto Advisory Committee. And it's my understanding that the Auto Advisory Committee unanimously said to the shop, you need to give them all their money back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the shop hasn't said whether they're going to give them the money back or not, but here's my promise to you folks out there in radio land. This might be the first time somebody's taken advantage of my $5,000 promise. My promise is if you go through the process I've described, and I'm not loading the process on my end. I promise you that.
Mm-hmm.
So you go through the process as I describe it. A nice complaint goes through the Better Business Bureau Auto Advisory Committee where all the experts are seated. It's a committee I created, but I haven't been there for 10 years.
Right.
So it goes there. If the shop is told to make a refund or fix your car and the shop refuses, I will. Now, here's the deal. This is $5,500 and my promise is $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have talked about this.
Right.
This is the first time it's ever happened.
Yeah.
We're going to do the whole $5,500.
Right.
That doesn't mean if you have a $10,000 bill, we're going to jump from $5,000 to $10,000. Don't misunderstand. But I think at the appropriate time, if this doesn't get settled in the very near future, and once we get a firm denial or no from the shop, we've already put him on suspension, haven't we?
Yes. Yeah, he's not on the list anymore. And unfortunately, he did... mechanical work for a long time, and we never had issues with that. But
right.
Then when he delved into this paint and body, that's where we seem to have gotten into trouble, and he's, not willing to.
He's not on our list anymore, and really and truly, he's not going to be on our list again.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing he can do to make up for the last 6 months of grief I've had
right.
with respect to this claim on this insurance car. And what really made this double tough is the customer was such a nice gentleman about the whole thing. He never raised his voice. He never called anybody names.
Mm-hmm.
He stuck with him, and people made suggestions. Try this, try that. You should talk to him and do this. He went along with all the advice people gave him. He went along with giving the shop 2 or 3 opportunities to fix it. I mean, he did everything.
Yeah, he was really nice about the whole thing. He didn't have to be, but he was. So
anyway, Ron, I'm sorry you had a problem with Mike's a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you would have told me about that. I would have got involved, and I would have done my best to look at this from a neutral point of view. I could say to you, no, that 11 hours is fair. I could have said to you, no, it's not fair. I could have said to you, Mike realizes it's wrong, and as a result of that, he's willing to give you this discount or this refund. I could have been involved, and there's four ways these can go. It's a yes, no, it's a maybe, or middle ground. So I mean, there's things that I can help you with.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, Ron. I'm sorry that you had a problem. I think it's more your fault than my fault that you sat on this for a year and you let it stew. But I want to tell you that you're wrong when you say that some of my shops aren't as good as I purport them to be. They're better than what I tell you they are. And it didn't take my family and me, didn't take us long to figure our butts was in big trouble over this last issue. And we were involved in this at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So for the rest of you, I'm washing some dirty laundry in front of you.
Yeah.
But we've kicked three shops off of our list. This is the third.
Mm-hmm.
And most all the information is on our website. So
right.
If you want to go look at it, you can.
Yeah, so that's kind of why it's important to look at the website every now and then, because things are moving kind of in the automotive world too. We had, you know, a great body shop by us that just was bought out by a big corporation or whatever. And so we had to take them off the list just because the management has changed and we don't do chains.
We had IMM.
Yeah.
Dropped off of our list. He's been on our list since Jesus was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
IMM was a Fiat, Toyota, import, Volvo, Alfa Romeo. And
Great shop, yeah.
And he called me and David told me I'm selling, but he sold to his head technician.
Mm-hmm.
So I've talked to his head technician. I say, we got a rule that 5-year management. He says, I'll be back to see you in 5 years.
Yeah.
So we had to remove IMM from our list, but in reality, personally, I'm going to still recommend them.
Right.
But they're not on my list and they're not covered by the $5,000 a guarantee because he doesn't have 5 years.
Right.
So
yeah.
He's close enough to our shop. We've always referred those cars that he's really good at to him.
Yeah.
So personally,
nothing's changed, but
right.
But the owner actually.
And
so.
Then there was Envision Auto Body sold,
mm-hmm.
So they dropped off our list, and we loved them.
Yeah,
we loved
them.
There
was two locations, and they were both great.
And so Envision's gone, IMM's gone, and then Mike's is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that's gone, but only one for disciplinary reasons. The other two were sold or something like that.
Right.
So anyway, that's kind of what happens with that kind of stuff. When we come back, we're going to talk about a customer who took his own parts into the shop and the fiasco that occurred after that. But if you have a comment, 602-508-0960,
602-508-0960. And was it Dave? Dave, we'll get to you like right after the break.
Right after the break. Dave,
yeah.
You'll be my first caller. Thank you very much. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, Mark and Renee Salem here at your service, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And let's do what we promised. Dave, you're first. How can we help you today?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I bought my wife a 2014 Mustang 2 years ago. It's got 46,500 miles on it, and she just recently told me the heater doesn't work. Now, my wife weighs about 105 pounds, and she gets cold easy, and when mama ain't happy, nobody's happy.
Oh, your house is like mine, and everybody, yeah.
It's the joys of marriage. So, I've checked all I know to check. The coolant level is full and clean. All the fans work, but all we get out of the heater is cold air.
Okay. You know where the two heater hoses come from the motor and go through the firewall?
Yes.
Okay. We need to make sure both of those are hot. So go drive it, hop on the freeway for 10 minutes, you know, come back home or pull off to the side of the road, someplace safe, pop the hood and grab a hold of both those hoses. Now, if both hoses are hot, we got water flowing through that heater core. So at that point, we've probably got some blend door problem because the blend door stuck and the blend door, you know, swings left for cold air and swings right for hot air in a simplistic way. So that's what we need to find out first is do we have water running through the heater core? Now, if you've got one line hot and the other line's cold, then clearly we don't have circulation. Then the question is why? So at that point, we have to, a lot of times we'll pull the two lines off the heater core and will gently pass, you know, water through it both ways. And sometimes it's just dirty and plugged up, and so you flush it out the best you can. That only happens about 20% of the time. 80% of the time, you can't do anything with it, and you have to go dig it out of the dashboard, which is behind the glove box, and it's a big, big ticket item.
So, I'm not going to dashboard this car apart myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if it's, now that's assuming that one's hot and one's cold. The second thing is if they're both hot, then blend door is still underneath the dash, but it's a piece of cake. I want you to picture the letter Y, okay? And the left arm of the Y is cold, and the right arm of the Y is hot. But where the two, where they all intersect, where the two arms and the stand intersects, there's a door there. So if the door swings to the right, it blocks off hot air and gives you cold air. And if the door swings to the left, it shuts off the cold air and gives you hot air. That's what a blend door is all about. So now, a blend door can be a vacuum operated or an electrical motor. And so you have to go in there and make sure you have power and ground to the electric motor and make sure that the control head is telling the blend door to move, then, or sending vacuum to move it or default it, and then you have to check the operation of it. Really and truly on a 1 to 10 scale, this is an 8, but it's not the most difficult thing in the world, and any good technician won't have any problem diagnosing this.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you, buddy.
All right. Thanks.
You betcha. Let me tell you real quick about a customer who took in two front shock absorbers to one of my shops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't install customer parts, but our customers who have been with us, for instance, if they have a five-digit number, customer number, they're new. They're newer. We're at 33,000. But if they're...
Wait, a five-digit, they're older.
They're older.
Okay.
No. A five-digit, they're a newer customer.
Oh, I got you.
Okay,
I'm
but
sorry.
The four-digit customers, the three-digit customers, and, of course, the two-digit customers been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We might stretch that rule a little bit because Grandma Moses lives in Ahwatukee, and son-in-law sends her a set of shock absorbers. We're going to put the shocks on for Grandma Moses if she has a two- or three- or four-digit customer number.
Okay.
We're not going to make a habit of it. But anyway, the shop puts on the front shocks. And there's a noise. No one knows if the noise was still there, but it is now. And no one knows if the shop gave them the noise or in the installation of the shocks or not. So we have all of these questions. So we agree that we're going to look at it. So we found a loose connection. We tightened it up, which made the noise better,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't fix the noise. So we got an email the other day, and finally the customer in the shop decided that let's replace the front strut, that one of the two, but the front that's affected by the noise. We mm-hmm. all agree it's in the right front.
Yeah.
So they sent the shock back, and the manufacturer replaced it, and it was one of those auto parts store on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
They put it on, and the problem was fixed.
Right. Yeah, I think Eddie thought it was in that shock. So,
but he also found a bad connection,
right.
or a loose connection.
A loose nut or something, yeah.
And so we made it better, but we didn't charge because we were doing it on behalf of one of our shops.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the moral of the story? The moral of the story is he had to pay to have that shock absorber replaced twice.
Right.
Because the shop didn't cause the problem. The shock absorber was defective. And under the circumstances, had the shop sold those shock absorbers, the shop would have absorbed all the cost of the diagnosis and the warranty of the shock.
Right.
The replacement of the shock and the realignment wiped out that customer's profit in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you need to think about, because your part doesn't have a warranty. And so if they install this, you know, $180 alternator that takes, $96 to replace, and if it doesn't work, then you're going to pay the $96 again or not.
Yeah. Then they think that we did it, and we think that it's their bad part, and so it gets into a bad thing. And so that's why we've decided it's just not worth it to install customers' parts.
Well, and there's a lot of reasons we've decided.
Yeah,
it's a very small portion. It's single-digit customers we have out of 33,000 that even care about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The second part problem is that we've been burned. We tried to hold off as long as we could,
right?
But it's been a continuing problem. And you're right. What happens is we have to fix the problem to prove that it wasn't our installation.
Mm-hmm.
We have to diagnose it for free. And then in this case, the shop didn't have to pay for the take it off and put it back on the second time because the shock did fix the problem.
Yeah.
So the shop in and of itself, along with our help, proved that it was the shock. Mm-hmm. And so the customer, I think, and we got a nice letter from the customer thanking us for all of our intervention and stuff. And he was a great guy, by the way. He didn't yell at us. He didn't call us names. he was very accommodating. He was a good guy.
Yeah.
So we were all trying to help him. But that's the problem with bringing your own parts in. Mm-hmm. All righty, Jerry, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, this is Jerry.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing this morning?
Good. Thank you.
I just want to tell you, this is my Saturday morning listening to your show.
Thank you.
I'm a retired mechanic, but I've been out of it for 20 years now, and I've had a couple people look for places to go, and I've heard about your shop when I first moved here about 30 years ago, and I always had respect for it, so I sent people your way. Figure you're one of the more reliable shops around town. So.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank
anyway,
you.
Wait a minute,
Jerry. Tell him that you aren't my brother and that we've never met and you're not doing this for money, okay?
Yeah, I'm not your brother. I'm an out-of-towner. I come from the Midwest.
All righty.
In fact, there's a gal I used to work up at. And place up Nissan, and one of the gals who worked there came to work for you for a while as your writer, but I don't know if you still can't remember her name. Seems like it's Barbara. I can't remember. It's been a while.
Anyway,
I have a 2006 Buick Rainier 4.2 L6 gas guzzler.
Okay.
Anyway, all of a sudden, just as the weather cooled down, I started getting a rough idle. And the more you load the engine, the worse it get. It always thought it was kind of felt like a lean idle, but it's not a miss. It runs fine. It doesn't cut out or miss or anything. But
how many miles are on it?
About around 70.
Okay. Okay. I'm up against a break. You stay right there. And
okay.
I've got a couple of ideas. I want you to start thinking idle air control motor. I want you to start thinking cleaning up the throttle blades.
1 minute.
And I want you to maybe stop by an auto parts store and have them see if there's any codes. But there's not going to be any codes if you don't have a check engine light on. So if you don't have a check engine light, you can save that step. But start thinking about throttle blade cleanup. Start thinking about idle air control motor cleanup. Not normally for 70,000 miles we'd see that, but this is 11 years old. Last but not least, I want you to think about this. I'm quite sure at one time or another you decarbonized an engine like this, and you might want to do that again.
Okay.
All right? And so we're going to talk about it, and we're going to do that in, you know, another 2 or 3 minutes. So just hang on, and we'll do it. And, George, you stay there, too, because you're going to be right after Jerry. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We're going to be here till noon, so we've got plenty of time to take your call. If you just give us a call, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem, Renee Salem. My wife of 44 years is sitting here next to me. I married her when she was 10.
Thank you.
And I'm being nice. We'll be back. My name's Mark Salem. Renee's sitting here next to me, and we're answering your calls and questions real quick. Let me just tell you quickly about Action Auto. He's up on Deer Valley and I-17 Northwest Corner. Tom owns it. I've known Tom since the late 70s and early 80s. I've already talked to one caller this show about maybe visiting Tom, and I want to tell you, if you live in the North Phoenix or Deer Valley area, Tom is a great shop. He's honest. He's dependable. They're really good at the three things that are important to you. Symptom analysis, diagnosis, and then repair. And actually, there's four. And the repair is verifying that what you went to fix is now fixed. That's important. That's the mark of a good shop. Symptom analysis, that means getting them symptoms from the customer, then diagnosing the problem, repairing it, then verifying the problem, the vibration, the noise is gone and fixed. So Tom is a really good guy, I-17 and Bell, northwest corner of I-17 and Deer Valley. That's where he's at. All righty, let's go back to Jerry real quick. Jerry?
Yeah.
I'm thinking that would be the place I would start. I would be interested in tomorrow morning on a Sunday morning if Jerry were at an on-ramp at the local freeway close to where he lives and he's looking around and there's nobody behind him, nobody in front of him, and there's no highway patrolman sitting at the end of the ramp, that he throttles that baby up as hard as he can and he goes to the end of the ramp and he looks in his rearview mirror and he looks to see if he laid down a James Bond kind of cloud of carbon. And then he gets off at the next exit and he does the same thing two or three times until there is
is no carbon. Then he finds out that there is a substantial quality increase with respect to the idle. And then at that point, I'd clean the throttle blades and pull the idle air control motor out and clean it, and I think that would probably take care of you.
The first thing I did was clean the throttle blade.
Okay.
And it seemed like it got a little better, but in my mind, I'm thinking when I had that off, I don't think that blade was snapping shut tight. I thought it had to kind of relax a little bit. I don't know.
Okay. Well, and let me tell you, there are we have to synchronize three things. We have to. It's called resetting minimum idle authority, where we have a TPS value,
yeah,
and we have an RPM, and we have the idle air control motor completely out of the circuit. So we're gonna you know, set throttle blade angle with the TPS. Then we're gonna set an idle RPM, or we expect an idle RPM, and then we shut it off and put the idle air control motor in and set it all up that way. That might be something that you can read about, but as a former technician, I'm quite sure if you can just read the TPS value, you can pull that off.
Okay.
All righty?
Yeah.
All right. Well, good luck to you. And by the way, thank you for having faith to refer us. Thank you very much for that.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
All righty. And George, you're up next. George, how can I help you?
I've got a Toyota I'm trying to put lug bolts on.
Okay.
They're hung up pretty tight. They don't want to come back through the hole. Apparently the hole is 2/100ths smaller than the head of the lug nut that I ordered that was supposed to be the one to go to the vehicle. Is that unusual? And if not, should I put some kind of lubricant or something? It's tough.
No, 200. You said 200 thousandths.
It's actually the hole is 0.54, and the bolt is 0.56.
Okay, why not just go take those same calipers and go check the rest of the studs? Because I think you got the wrong studs.
Well, that's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah, measure the other ones.
Well, I did measure the other ones. The other ones that were in there were like 1/100th off.
Okay.
And these are new ones are like 2, and so I don't know, is that going to fold back enough to pull that through, or should I get some new bolts?
No, if and you're talking about the threaded studs, yes.
Yeah, the threaded part's fine. It's that little head, you know, where it's crimped at the end.
Yes.
And that part's got to come through that metal. That's where it's hanging up.
Okay, the splined area. You've got splines on the back of them, and you're trying to bring them all the way through. Are you trying to tighten them up and suck in that stud through the hub?
That's what I'm doing. I put a washer in there,
okay,
and then I take the new lug nut with the new bolt and tighten it up, and it will not come through.
Okay. Have you got just one that won't come through, or have you got any of them that are okay?
They're all the same.
One minute.
I had two break off when I took them off to change a tire,
okay,
and they're just old, rusted and stuff, and so I just went ahead and got 10 new ones. I was going to do the whole front.
All right.
And I've just never run into this before.
All right. Now, is it two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive?
It's a front-wheel drive.
Okay.
Two.
Can you take the hub off?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I looked that up.
Okay.
I was going to take the hub off and pound them through.
Them through or press them through, yes.
Yeah, and it's quite a job on this little Toyota, apparently, to take that hub off.
Okay. You know, there's no easy way. The way you're doing it isn't the right way. So you always run the risk of stretching out the stud by trying to pull the head up to the back of the hub. You always run that risk. I know for my guys, I won't let them do that. Now, sometimes if it's 4 hours to pull the hub, then we'll use a little heat. We'll use a little grease. We'll put an air hammer behind it where the head is going to match up with the stud, or the hub, I should say, and we'll push it and pull it at the same time. But then it's going to have that nut go on there finger tight all the way on and all the way off, because if it doesn't go all the way on and all the way off, you stretch the threads and you're back to where you started. There is some of the guys that will take the spline part and they'll just run a file around them and knock off 5 or 10 thousandths on the top and the bottom, which equals, 10 thousandths on the top and the bottom equals 20 thousandths.
and they'll get them in there. Some of the other guys, the old timers, are going to tell you to put them in the best you can, tighten them up the best you can, go drive it, make lots of hard lefts and hard rights, and they'll pull through themselves.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, but I'm not telling you to do that, but there's some old gray haired guys, buddies of mine, that have done it that way.
I'm not holding you to any of this. Okay. I'm trying to get some ideas, and you're giving me a couple of ideas, so I appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much. And Lee and Bruce and Chris, you stay right there. I've got to take a break. We'll be back in 3.5 minutes. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about a really good shop. Kurtz Automotive is up at I-17 in Bell. Folks, I can't tell you how many times that I've had a customer call me and tell me how happy they were with Kurt. There's Kurt and his wife, and then there's Jeff and Eric. And Kurt and Jeff and Eric are all master technicians. And it's pretty uncommon to find three guys out of a 5 or 6 bay shop that are actually master technicians. But they're really, really good. And I remember one of the big times that Kurt was a hero was the lady had been given 3 estimates for an engine repair. And Kurt replaced the oil pressure switch and fixed the symptom that the other said that the lady needed an engine. And obviously the $60, $70 that he charged her versus the $3, $4, $5, $6,000 that she had been bid by other people made her a lifetime customer. So if you live anywhere near I-17 in Bell and you don't have a shop, may I suggest you try Kurt's, northeast corner of I-17 in Bell. Lee, you're up next. How can I help you?
I have an 01 Mercedes that... the air conditioning used to be ice cold, and all of a sudden it's cooled off. Not a pickup truck, not a Chevy, a Mercedes.
Well, when was the last time it was serviced, or do you know?
I really don't know.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
I'm up in Sun City.
Okay. I would go to Thunderbird Auto at 88th and Thunderbird, unless you have a shop already. Go to the shop or go to Tom at Thunderbird and 88th Avenue. Tell him that you haven't had it serviced in recent time, and here's what I think he's going to do. This is what I say to my customers. It's $125 for the service. What I'm going to do is I'm going to suck all your Freon out, and I'm going to weigh it. I'm going to remove the water, and I'm going to remove any contaminants. So I'm going to filter the heck out of it. Now, let's pretend that your car holds 30 ounces, and I pull out 19. Well, now I know the problem is. So I'm going to put your 19 back in and not charge you for it, and I'm going to add 11 to it, and we're going to be back to brand new. We've never had a dipstick for the Freon level until the last 2 or 3 years, and most of us have this equipment. Now, you're going to pay $120 at my shop. I don't know about Tom's, but you're going to pay it. I'm giving you some pricing parameters. $125 plus 11 ounces of Freon. And sales tax. That's what you're going to pay at my shop. I'm quite sure most everybody is $3 up, $3 down from me. So that's what I would do. Okay?
What is an ounce of Freon then, Mark?
Well, it depends on what you have. Do you know if it's 12 or 134? I think it's a 134.
Okay.
And I don't know the...
I can't remember
either. I can't either.
I don't know. $225 comes to mind, but I'm not positive on that.
And I'm thinking the same thing. I'm thinking we're going to be somewhere in the infinity of $1.50 to $3, but we have three different Freons, and I only know the expensive one is almost $10
mm-hmm.
an ounce.
Yeah.
So the other ones are going to be, I'm pretty sure $1.50 to $3 is going to be the range.
Somewhere in there.
All righty?
Quick, it's 88. And Thunderbird, and the name of the place is?
Thunderbird Auto.
Thunderbird Auto.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All righty. Good luck. Thank you very much. Bruce, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. I have a 2001 Pathfinder and a two-wheel drive with pretty new tires. I mean, maybe a year or something like that. And it's been, it starts to feel like it's kind of going out of control when I get around. You know, it feels like it's going to roll. I mean, it's kind of a back-and-forth rolling kind of motion.
Okay.
I took it into one shop, and they actually, they said, yeah, they could feel it too. And when they took off the front left wheel, there's a nut that holds, I guess, the bearing. It was kind of loose, and they tightened it back up. And that seemed to kind of help a little bit. But now I haven't taken it back. I haven't, I will think it came loose that quickly. It was only like a couple weeks ago.
All right.
But it feels pretty scary.
Okay, here's what I want you to do, okay? Can you get some help? Can you get somebody to help you for 5 or 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, good. you're going to trust this person because you're going to start the car but put the emergency brake on, okay? Uh-huh. And you're going to crawl underneath the front of this Pathfinder, and you're going to have the person put their hand at 12 o'clock on the steering wheel, and they're going to go about 3 inches to the left, then back to center, 3 inches to the right, and back to center. They're going to do that until you tell them to stop. You crawl underneath the front of that car, and you put your right hand, you're on your stomach, you put your right hand on the driver's side wheel, and you watch the passenger side wheel, and I'll bet they don't move in complete synchronization.
Oh, okay.
And then you're going to follow from the steering box to the pitman arm to the center link to the one tie rod, the center link to the other tie rod. You're going to follow the linkage all the way from the wheel to the steering box on both sides, and you'll be able to see the play you're describing.
Okay.
And and you know what? If the other guys did a good job and you felt comfortable with them tightening up the nut and they did make progress, I think you should repatronize them, is my personal opinion.
Okay. Okay.
All right? Yes. All right. Thank you very much, Bruce. Thank you very much. It's a great question, by the way. Chris, you're up next. How can I help you?
Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2003 Civic that I've had since the beginning. Recently, had a check engine light on, and it started to have difficulty starting. I'd be going about 40 miles an hour, and I would accelerate, and it would hesitate really, really bad. And so check the engine light, and it was a cab position sensor. I replaced that yesterday. I started it up again, and the engine light's back on. It's doing the exact same thing.
Okay. So, well, the code doesn't mean that. What did you replace?
The cam position sensor.
Okay. No, the code doesn't mean that the cam position sensor is bad. The code means that the problem is in Ohio, and you have to go find the problem. It's saying, I see a problem with the timing, and I think it's the cam sensor, but we have to synchronize the cam sensor with the crank sensor. And most of the time that synchronization is messed up, and it's because the harmonic balancer is slipping, or it's good because one of the sensors has come loose, or because something shorted, or one of the sensors aspirated oil. There's all kinds of problems. But replacing the part is never a good idea because and let me give you an example. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of oxygen sensor codes, O2 codes. My shop replaces the O2 sensor less than 20% of the time.
Okay.
So we have, I'll tell you, plugged fuel filters can cause an O2 sensor code. So, and you can have some kind of a knocking sensation. You can have a rocker assembly that can confuse the cam sensor. You're just going to need a little bit of help. That's all. Now, I think I would find a shop and say to them, I would really like you to diagnose this and call me with an estimate. And what is your diagnostic range? Most everybody's going to say between 75 and 150, somewhere around there.
Okay.
So, and then you say, okay, are you sure? But here's the risk. You say, are you sure? They say, yes, we're sure. You put the part on. It doesn't fix it. That's kind of ugly. I'm hoping that you'll look at the part and the labor to install it as insignificant and go ahead and have them fix it. Then you can hold their feet to the fire. Then you can say, wait a minute, you said this is going to fix it. I didn't agree for you to guess with my money. So, and then it's okay for you to say to them on the phone, this is a fix, not a guess, right? Because when people say that to my staff, we're not offended. We're proud to raise our hand and say, no, we're going to fix it. We promise. We're going to fix it. That check engine light's not going to come back on, and if it does, it isn't going to be the same code, that's for sure. So that's the kind of conversation you should have.
And keep your old parts.
And keep your old parts. That's exactly right. I want the old part put back in the box of the new one and put it on the passenger side floor of the car, and if it's oily, put some towels underneath it. But I want my old parts back. Because if the check engine light comes back on and you have the same code, you can go back and say, you might want to put this one back on and let's start over again. Those are options that you're going to have. I'm just preparing you for the worst kind of shop. I'm not preparing you for the good guys, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Anthony, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
What I have is a 90 Dodge a Ram V6, the non... there's a high-performance V6. It's not that. Okay. I have the regular one. The vehicle quit running a couple months ago. I did some... I wasn't going to have the codes picked up, but they want like $85 to run the codes, and I just didn't want to do that. I changed the TPS.
No, wait. Well, no, we're not going to... You know, you can talk to me about what you've changed. I need to ask you some questions.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Go ahead.
It cranks over, but it doesn't catch?
It doesn't snow. No, it, there's fuel's not coming in on the
inlet
line.
No, I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you that. Okay? You got to work with me on this. It cranks over, but it doesn't catch. Have you tried to squirt some carb spray or some brake spray into the mouth of the intake system? And if you're right and the fuel system is deficient, then the car will start and then die.
That's exactly what happened, only I used gas.
Oh, that's a bad idea, but next time use propane or something like that.
Okay.
At this point, you don't have a pressure gauge, so you don't know that the fuel system has or has not pressure, because if you lose the trigger to the computer to tell them that the engine's running or wanting to run, the computer won't cycle the injectors, and you can have perfect fuel pressure, but we don't have injectors opening and closing. So you have to verify. Now, if you're right and you have a fuel problem, then pull a spark plug wire, stick your little finger inside that boot, have your wife crank the motor over, and when you yell and scream like a little girl, then you go, Mark was right, I have spark, but I'm missing fuel. Now, here's the deal. You can't, if we stop cycling the injectors, we also stop cycling the spark. So if you don't have spark and you add fuel, you supplement fuel, you artificially inseminate the motor and it starts, then there's a problem there, because if it starts, it has spark. So if you start it and with given gas and it starts and dies, certainly that suggests fuel pressure. That's why I say you need a gauge to check the fuel pressure. If you want to make a stab at it, then replace the fuel pump that's probably inside the tank.
I did that this past January, so it's a brand new fuel pump.
Okay. Well, then the only other thing it could be is the fuel pressure regulator, which is at the end of the rail. The fuel pressure under pressure goes forward. It goes through the rail, feeds all the injectors, and on the way out, there's a return line that goes back to the tank. And so at the return line, there's a fuel pressure regulator there. It's supposed to shut and make fuel pressure, and when you throttle it up, then it'll dump a little bit of the pressure because you don't need that much pressure. Another thing that you might want to do is check the fuel filter to make sure it's not plugged up. And another thing you want to do is you want to look at the owner's manual and see if you have a relay for the fuel pump. And if you do, it's probably going to be the same relay as the air conditioning relay. So I would swap the air conditioning into the fuel pump, and I'd put the fuel pump into the air conditioning and see if that made a difference.
Well, I checked the relays in that. It's not the shutdown relay. I have a relay at the middle of the front panel there. And is that part of the air conditioning relay, the one that sits right in the middle?
No, you have to look at your owner's manual. It has a picture of your fuse panel. I can't answer that question. But you have to look at your owner's manual, because the owner's manual is going to show you the position of all the relays. And there's probably going to – I'm not talking about a shutdown relay. I'm talking about the fuel pump relay if it's got one. So if it's got one, swap it with the air conditioning. They're almost always universal. But I got to run, as you can tell by my voice. If you want to continue that conversation, Anthony, I'm happy. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. It's also important that I can't fix your car over the radio, and I can't walk you through step by step. I'll be happy to give you advice, but I don't have that kind of time. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. They're on Main Street in Stapley. They're the only shop in Mesa that's passed the very strict requirements we have to be on Mark Salem's Best Car Repair Shops. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair. They're the second or maybe the third generations under the Thompson name. They've been around for a very long time that dates back to the 60s, I believe. So if you're in Mesa and you don't have a repair shop, then perhaps stop by Thompson's Auto Repair just east of Stapley on the south side of Main Street, centrally located, and they are a really good shop, and you only need to meet Brian and Thelma to know why Mark Salem is so fond of those people running that shop. They are really, really good at what they do. So, here's your self-defense tip for the day. You look at shops, including mine and everybody else, and you say, what symptom do I have that suggests that what you say is wrong, I need? So when they tell you need lower control arm bushings, you say, what symptoms are you going to fix? And if they do, then you know you need to move on. On the other hand, if they say, come out and I'll show you, the bushing's missing, and it's got a clunk and I can demonstrate the clunk, that's altogether different. So those are the important aspects of knowing about car repair. It's also a great thing to say to them, is this a guess or a fix? Because I don't want to guess with my money. So if you say it's a fix, then you did the diagnosis, you're going to replace or adjust or clean the part, and my symptom's going to be fixed. Yes? There's nothing wrong with saying that. I wouldn't say it as if you were a drill sergeant, but I would say it kind. And everything I tell you to do, my customers already do to me. And I implore them to do that to me and my staff. Is it a guess or a fix? That's an important question, especially when you're spending big bucks. Now, there is an opportunity for that to be a guess. Mrs. Jones, I can't get your stalling problem, but I do know that the pickup assembly in your little Dodge is a real problem. And there's seven different colors, and you have the color number one, and they're now down to seven colors. So I'd like to put an orange one in there, and the part and the labor is going to run you $110. But Mrs. Jones, this is a guess.
1 minute.
I cannot duplicate your problem. This is an educated guess. I am not going to give you a refund if this doesn't fix your car. What do you want me to do? Your choices are this. Wait till it gets worse and easier to find, or go with my educated guess.
Or say no.
Or say no. Those are your options.
Yeah.
And that's a clean way to handle that. So what are my options? And when you have an intermittent problem, you only have two options. Guess or wait till it gets worse and easier to find.
Yes.
And that means wait till it dies on the side of the road and doesn't restart. And then it's easy to figure out what's wrong with it. So my email address is mark@salemboysauto.com. Mark@salemboysauto. You can also reach me at mark@marksalem.com. And Salem is spelled like the cigarette. Thanks for spending Saturday with me.
You're really welcome. Appreciate
it. And we'll be back next Saturday at 9 o'clock for the Swap Shop Show, and then 10 to noon, we're talking about cars. So we'll see you then. God bless you. Wear your seatbelt.